5. It never failed. Every time I looked up at one of these disgusting things, I had the same question. Why on Earth, or any other planet for that matter, would anyone ever call them anything other than bugs? Their bulbous lower bodies flared out into a bowling pin shape with spiked backward-facing knees on long legs. That, combined with their unblinking black oval eyes and the antennae sticking out of their ugly identical faces, it was obvious they shared more than a little DNA with the tiny things that crawl on our walls and shuffle around us in our dark corners. The difference, of course, is that instead of being relegated to the lowest rung on the evolutionary ladder, these bugs were in charge of things. That was why the Alliance pushed the people of Earth to abandon the bug moniker. They didn't want us to underestimate the Akbarians. To try to reinforce this point, my HUD conveniently added the nameplate Akbarian Soldier A, rank unknown, over the bug's head. For people like me, though, soldiers who had lost more than a few nights' sleep dealing with these things, we didn't need to be reminded of how dangerous these things were. The evidence of it was literally staring me in the face. The monster peered down at me, its mouth open as it emitted a sound that my early Marine training had taught me was most likely to call to its comrades. Saliva dripped from its open, fang-filled maw. These things were stronger than us. They were even faster than us. Even the greenest of grass-feds knew that. They knew that, while the suits were powerful and provided us with our best shot at survival, they still didn't make us equal with the bugs. Not even close. Still, what sometimes got lost in the horror stories of what these bugs were capable of was the fact that they weren't nearly as flexible or agile. Sure, the bugs were large and damn near indestructible, but all that size and strength didn't come without a price. They couldn't contort the same way we did, couldn't move in the same directions and ways that we could. We were twisty and lithe creatures in comparison, even if we came in infinitely more fragile packaging. "Activate reverse leg thrusters," I cried to Annabelle. "Affirmative," she answered directly into my head. As her words filled my brain, my suit moved to comply with what I'd just said. Heat burst out of my feet in twin explosions that threw me backward. As I slid across the jagged rocks and dry dirt of this planet's surface, the bug bounded toward me. I remember the first time I saw a bug move, bopping up and down on inverted knees in an almost hypnotic rhythm. I almost met my maker right then and there, and if not for Bill's warning scream to me, I might not have made it out of that particular fight. I'd survive, though, and the least I could do was make sure his son was given the same opportunity. Of course, I'd have to survive myself first. I watched the bug bridge the gap between us in the blink of an eye. "Leg thrusters off. Shoulder thrusters on." With my leg thrusters off, I stopped sledding across the ground, and with shoulder thrusters pushing me in the other direction, I found myself suddenly standing upright. I had all of 2 seconds to pick a weapon to defend myself from this thing. Otherwise, I'd be in pieces on the sand. "Initiate pulse cannon." I threw my hand forward to burn a hole through the damn thing's exoskeleton armor.
"Negative,"
Annabelle replied. "What?" I asked as my unarmed forearm remained that way. I didn't have time to rectify the situation. The Predator was too close to me for that. I'd have to rely on evasive maneuvers until I could figure out what was going on. Like a praying mantis, these bugs weren't much for beating around the bush, and this one was no exception. They went for kill shots and kill shots alone. If they weren't greedy sons of bitches who wanted to kill us and hollow out our planet for damn metal, I could almost respect that. They were, though. So all I had to do was make sure I didn't find myself on the receiving end of one of them, as the bug's large, ribbed and ridged, scythe-like arms lashed out at me. I threw my body backward, my back arching so far and fast it nearly broke. I felt the heat coming off the thing's arms as they whooshed past me, which pissed me off even more. Annabelle should have increased my thermal dampening. I thrust myself forward, slamming my helmeted head into the damn thing's face with all the force my mechanized armor could bring to bear. It let out a high-pitched shriek and stumbled backward, shaking its head as it regained its footing. I turned, running as fast as I could away from the beast. Like they trained us to, I zigged and zagged in a Z formation as I rushed away. The back and forth would prove difficult for the bug, and while it wouldn't stop it from catching me, it might slow it down enough for me to figure out what the hell was going on with my weapon systems. "Annabelle," I said, my jaw tight and my mouth dry. "What's up, sweetness?"
"The atmosphere in this area is rife with an unusually high amount of chlorine gas, which would prove fatal to the human body almost immediately. Power was automatically redirected from weapon systems to emergency self-preservation for this and the other two suits connected to you. This setting cannot be overridden, and per rules and regulations set forth by the Alliance and agreed upon by you upon reception of, well, of me."
"I remember what I agreed to," I muttered, thinking about what this meant. The air in this place wasn't full of chlorine. It would have been the first thing those damned Alliance receptors would have picked up when they snuck into the atmosphere. That's when I noticed the geysers in the distance. Thick yellow-green smoke spilled into the atmosphere, and because chlorine was about 2.5 times heavier than air, it was displacing the atmosphere down here. That wouldn't cause a problem for the bugs, but for us, well, my eyes widened in realization. The bugs had set a trap for us. That was why the damn cameras were able to get in the first place. The bugs wanted us here, and now that we were, they were going to kill us, either by tearing us apart or smothering us with their poisoned environment. The joke was on them, though. They probably expected to lure us in for a full-scale invasion, and they'd gotten, what, 12 of us? That was the problem with traps. You couldn't catch what wasn't there. And if I had it my way, I'd make sure the Alliance knew what was going on. "Open communications lines," I said.
"To the others?"
Annabelle asked. "No," I answered. "To Della. To the Alliance."
"Negative, Lieutenant Ryder,"
Annabelle said as the massive insect bore down on me.
"In addition to being composed of corrosive and harmful materials, the chlorine cloud also appears to be infected with nanites, which are blocking reception to and from your suit. I am currently working to bypass them, but given the amount of power being channeled to keep the corrosion from eating through the suit and tearing away at your flesh, you currently have a 2.6 chance for success."
"Well, isn't that a kick in the nuts?" I muttered to myself. Not being able to communicate with the Alliance meant I also wouldn't be able to communicate with Billy and Conroy if all of it was down. At least not until after I was out of this damned cloud. It also meant the trap was even more sophisticated than I'd previously imagined. These bugs lured us here, and now they had trapped us, cut off our communication with each other, and forced our suits to redirect enough energy to render our long-range weapons completely unusable. Given the fact that those types of weapons, blasters, photon arrows, even good old-fashioned flamethrowers, accounted for 2/3 of all Alliance-inflicted bug deaths, it seemed likely the bugs would eventually counter it with something. Maybe I've been wrong about things all along. Maybe we hadn't been taking them seriously enough after all. "Well, damn," I muttered, pushing the thought away. I had more important things to focus on, like the fucking praying mantis about to slice open my guts. Thankfully, I wasn't completely out of tricks. While many of the newer recruits liked to spend what little money they didn't keep saved up on flashy long-range weapons, they had one flaw. Powerful weapons like that required big, bulky, complex electronics and firing mechanisms, which meant they took up a lot of space in any given suit's central mainframe where it shared the infrastructure with things like upgrades, digital intel, diagnostics, and neural interfacing. Because there was so much going on there, and because even the most technologically advanced piece of equipment the Earth had ever seen had its limitations, keeping long-range, high-powered weapons inside the suit itself was, at this point, an impossibility. It didn't usually matter. There was plenty of room at Alliance headquarters for that kind of thing, and one neural impulse sent in their direction,
would automatically send your long-range weapon right into your hands where it belonged. Of course, if you couldn't contact the damn headquarters, then you were just shit out of luck. Fortunately for me, I wasn't a new recruit. I was old school, trained by Lieutenant Carver James himself. He was a man of many talents, a legend in his own time, as the statue outside of the mess hall and headquarters would attest. The impressive bastard had one eye thanks to an early run-in with a bug. And he still clocked more successful missions than anyone in the history of the Alliance. Well, until me. He had taught me a lot of things, but the most important one, the one that had kept me alive this long, was the importance of always preparing for the worst. "Everything fails," he'd say. "All of this technology, it's just a crutch. When it falters, when it cracks and breaks, and it will, you need to be able to rise to the occasion. You need to be able to show those bugs that it's you, not all the bells and whistles that they need to fear. You're the one keeping them up at night in their disgusting little holes. Not the suit, but the person in it." So I did that. I trained hard in every imaginable way to be the best soldier I could be. I studied every form of martial arts. I looked over the plans of famous war generals throughout human history, and I made sure I was skilled with both long-range and close-combat weapons. And the cool thing about close-combat weapons is that they were usually pretty simple. Once you buy them, they can sit pretty in your armor's mainframe until you decide to call them up. No external connection needed. "Annabelle," I said, turning on my heels and spinning around. "Warhammer."
"Affirmative, Lieutenant Ryder," she said as I swung my hands toward the giant sack of slime still hurtling toward me.
The insect must have thought I was insane. I was in a place where long-range weapons couldn't be accessed, and here I was, stopping in mid-retreat to have a slap fight I was sure to lose. If I was a younger recruit, it would have been right. Melee weapons have fallen out of favor in the last few years. So much so that, in the back of my mind, a ping of worry told me the rest of my team were as good as sitting ducks. It was extraordinarily likely that if they even had a melee weapon, it'd be the stock piece of shit butter knife they beamed grass feds down with. And that wouldn't do the job against these sons of bitches. A sheen of blue energy shot from my hands as I took a home run swing at the creature. The energy morphed and melded, taking the shape of a large and heavy warhammer that solidified in my grip in time to clock the bastard right in the kisser. The blow caved in the side of its head, causing ichor to gush through the cracks in its exoskeleton as it stumbled sideways. Taking a deep breath, I readied myself to continue my assault. These bastards had pissed me off, and now they were going to see why that was such a costly mistake. I tossed the warhammer from one hand to the other, rejoicing in the weight of it. I'd bought this weapon just before they'd gone out of fashion, and ever since, I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. Large and black, it had a leather strap and a cinder block head that was capable of doing the damage of a wrecking ball when I swung it with my suit-enhanced strength. It was, without question, my weapon of choice for a long time, and as such, I'd outfitted it with a few upgrades. "Annabelle," I said, marching toward the bug with my hammer in the air. "You'd think our friend here might appreciate a light show?"
"There's only one way to find out, Lieutenant Ryder," she answered,
responding in one of the preset cues they'd programmed into the suit's AI systems to make them feel more human. I had to admit, it worked. Before that last upgrade, Annabelle had sounded like a fuzzy radio station that was set up exclusively to give the weather reports. Now I could almost have a conversation with her. "Initiate electrical impulse on Warhammer." I was fortunate energy damage upgrades on melee weapons were both simpler and far less energy intensive than ranged energy weapons. So despite the energy demands of the corrosive atmosphere, I could still fire up my hammer.
"I thought you'd never ask,"
she replied as the cinder block head of my warhammer shone with a bright blue flicker of crackling energy. The bug, now having regained its composure, lunged at me,
scythe hands swinging for my face and neck. I threw myself back, twisting my body downward and thrusting the electrified hammer toward him. It smashed into one of the creature's hands. An explosion of electrical energy tore the hand off the bug's arm, spraying me with a thick black fluid. Any other time, that would have really ruined my day. Now, though, I couldn't think of a more beautiful scene. As its limb went spinning off into the distance, the bug retreated, screeching in agony.
"Should I translate?" Annabelle asked,
referring to the horrific sounds coming out of the bug's mouth. "No," I answered. "I think I understand where it's coming from." I rushed the thing before it could recover and brought the massive warhammer down hard on the bug's head. The sickening crunch of the thing's head was deafening even over the sound of the wind whipping around me.
"Congratulations, Lieutenant Ryder," Annabelle chirped. "Your kill of Bug Soldier A will be credited to the kill leaderboards when contact with Alliance Command is reestablished. You've also received a 1,000 coin bounty."
I sighed at that canned message, one I'd heard thousands of times before. As I pulled back, placing my free hand on the bug's carcass and allowing its energy to pool into my suit, I watched as the sensors on my fingertips began to glow. That light pricked other lights along the energy points inside of the bug's body, the bioelectric batteries that enhanced the bug's natural physical superiority. Soon, a constellation of energy appeared in the thing before rushing to me and into my suit.
"Energy levels up 14%,
Annabelle said. And like always, when she announced the acquisition of bug energy, the words sounded sorta hot and heavy in a way I rarely heard outside the bedroom. I was about to open my mouth to ask if that was enough to allow me to access my offensive shielding, but a deafening howl of pain made my question die on my lips. That wasn't bug pain. It was human pain. Grass-fed pain. "Damn," I muttered, and sprinted toward the source of the noise. 6.
"Run external diagnostic check,"
I said to Annabelle as I ran toward the source of the screams. My heart was pounding and my mind was racing. You'd think I'd have gotten used to this by now, to the constant surprises that this life and these missions consisted of. In some ways, I guess I sort of had. I was harder. I was less trusting, less able to be calm, to be quiet. Still, you can't prepare for everything. And I didn't think I would ever be ready for all that might come my way while on these damn planets. The moon's horizon was a cloud of thick chlorine and nanite-infused sand. It was so dense I couldn't see my way in front of me. Worse, my sensors were still foobarred by the chlorine. As I rushed into the thickest pockets of it, where the scream had originated, it occurred to me that I could be rushing headlong into the enemy. See, the bug's physiology was pretty different from ours. While their atmosphere didn't normally contain toxic levels of chlorine, it didn't harm them the way it would us. The disgusting things were completely naked, save for their exoskeletons. Their body temperatures more than enough to stave off the cold on the planets and moons they typically occupied. What was more, their antennae allowed them to see in ways we humans couldn't. When their vision failed, they moved via a primitive form of sonar, meaning that while I was completely lost in this wall of dust and debris, the bugs would see me coming. They'd also see what I had just done to their comrade. And if there was one thing I knew about the bugs, other than the fact that they were extremely dangerous, it was that they were vindictive bastards. Worse, their hive mind would let all those in close proximity feel their comrade die. I'd be even more of a mark than I already was. And I was hoping I could use that to my advantage. The grass feds were helpless here. I knew that as well as I knew my own name. I needed to pull all the attention to me if they were going to have a chance of surviving this. Of course, if I wanted to survive it myself, I was going to need some assistance myself.
"Outward diagnostic scans reveal 3 Akburian entities and 2 human entities. While I am unable to directly communicate with the humans, initial size and weight suggest they are your teammates.
Annabel reported. Are they dead or dying? I asked. Weaving back and forth through the fog. It wouldn't be much in the way of cover, but hopefully it'd keep the bugs from getting me with a lucky shot if they decided to try to blast me.
One of the human entities has a racing pulse rate. The other's pulse seems to be dwindling by the second, as does his core body temperature. That suggests he's losing blood, I answered, cutting her off.
Do I have enough energy to switch the thermal vision?
Yes, Lieutenant Ryder, but not for long. Chlorine levels are at their highest in your current positioning. I've been forced to ratchet up internal shielding just to prevent catastrophic suit damage.
And there it was. The reason Annabel didn't need to ask my permission to divert the majority of my energy. Majority I had risked my life to procure. To self-help measures. On the surface. It might have sounded like it was meant to keep me safe. And ostensibly it was. Truth was, though, the only thing the people in charge cared about these days more than gathering bug energy was preserving the scraps of Olibrium covering our bodies. That was why there was no discussion between Annabel and me about self-preservation techniques. The chlorine in the air would eat through the suit if not for the shielding. It would then eat through my body. But that was of almost no consequence to the Alliance. The suit was what mattered. I was here, stuck on an alien planet, a prisoner to the whims of a technology that was supposed to work for me. Still, at the same time, I had to admit that while the orbital constitution technically let me ignore those issues, everyone I'd ever seen do it had died both quickly and violently. Fine, I muttered. Hold it as long as you can. I need to be able to see where I'm going.
Affirmative, Lieutenant Ryder.
In a flash of red, my eyes took on entirely new prisms. I could see through the sandstorm now, right into the heat signatures of the bugs and of Conroy and Billy. Unfortunately, with the breakdown of communications, the only information the nameplates could give me was generic. Squadmate 1 and Squadmate 2 was all it told me. My people were blind, of course. The sort of tech necessary for thermal vision was expensive and taxing on a suit. That was why Annabel couldn't hold it for long given our current hindrances. It also meant that there was no way people like Conroy and Billy could afford it. Billy, or at least I assumed it was Billy, based on shape and size, had a standard machete. It was a simple but effective weapon, though he'd have to be swinging it in the general direction of something for it to matter, and he wasn't. Conroy was on the ground. His heat signature was much weaker, almost blue instead of the standard red. It shouldn't have mattered to me. A soldier was a soldier. Still, I felt a rush of relief realizing it was him and not Billy who was essentially done for. I hadn't let Bill Langham's son die yet, and, God help me, I wasn't going to. The bugs saw me rushing toward them. I figured what I'd just done to their comrade was enough to earn me their full ire. I had underestimated them, though. They watched me dive into enemy territory and must have realized it was because of my urge to save these two. In turn, they ignored me, running back to their easier victims. Two of them descended on Conroy, and in an instant, I watched his blue heat signature get torn into a trio of scraps tossed to the earth below. His shriek was as stomach-churning as any I'd heard in all my years doing this. But almost as sickening was the cute, video-gamey way his nameplate shattered into a million electronic pieces. Why the Alliance had done that, I'd never know. But I wanted to punch the guy who designed it repeatedly. Part of me knew there was a study somewhere that said the animations helped desensitize us to the death of other soldiers. But I'd always found it tasteless, especially since I couldn't turn it off. I gritted my teeth and rushed toward Billy. Saving one was better than none, and to have any chance at that, I needed to move quickly. Switch on strobe lighting, I said.
There's not energy for both strobe and...
Then shut the damn heat vision off, I yelled. Just switch on strobe now. Suddenly I couldn't see anything anymore. The suit was blocking my vision again, though my suit was emitting a pulsating white light. If the stories were right, the people of Earth found out about the bug's weakness to strobe lighting by accident. They burst into a club in Germany one night while all the littlest Wiener Schnitzels were dancing around and grinding on each other under a twirling disco ball and flashing lights. They all stopped in their tracks when all the bugs stood frozen like grotesque statues. It would have been nice if this effect was permanent. I mean, if a flashing strobe light would keep the bugs frozen indefinitely, we would wrap ourselves in them. We'd put them on Christmas trees and install them in the headlights of our cars. Unfortunately, testing showed the effect could only be stretched for 90 seconds. And once it had been done to a bug, it could never be done again. Their mind adapted beyond their instincts pretty damn fast. Still, it was better than nothing. And I could only hope the bugs I was facing today had never been strobe before. I choked up on the handle of my warhammer, trying to remember where the bugs had been.
"Would you like me to showcase the last recorded visual from thermal vision, Lieutenant Ryder?"
Annabelle asked, her voice like the song of an angel. That was exactly what I needed.
"Sure thing, sweetness."
I squinted as a still picture of the bugs' last known places appeared on my HUD. If the strobe lights had worked, they would be frozen in roughly the same place. After that, it was all whack-a-mole. I ran full speed toward the first image, counting down the seconds in my head. I was at 30 when I swung the hammer. The satisfying feel of resistance and crack of exoskeleton under the weapon made my heart sing. I laid into that one a few more times, making sure I reduced it to a gooey puddle that wouldn't be getting up. The bugs had a nasty way of shaking off death blows, and being that I was fighting blind, I couldn't afford to risk it. One down. I spun on my heels, counting up to 57 seconds as I brought the warhammer down where the second bug was supposed to be. Again, I felt the creature give way under me and the spray of its internal fluids all over me. I kicked it down before slamming my warhammer onto its head with an overhanded blow that sprayed its insides across the ground. Turning, I rushed to the third. He was far enough away that I was at 85 seconds when I swung the hammer, flinching in anticipation of a result. The only sensation that came was my warhammer burying its head in the ground. "Damn it," I said. "He must have been exposed to the strobe already." All of that happened with an
"affirmative"
from Annabelle. When my vision went back to red, I saw the same thing over Billy. His heat signature had gone down too. It was purple, and in seconds it would be a cold and unforgiving blue. His body temperature was falling fast. He wouldn't last that long, though. Not with the bug standing over him like that. "Initiate targeting mechanism," I said quickly.
"On the creature?"
Annabelle asked. "Like you have to ask." Fresh targeting overlay appeared over the bug, readying to do to Billy what the others had just done to Conroy. I let go of the warhammer, letting it slip from my hands until I had a grip on the strap, spinning it hard in my hands like the propeller of one of those old-fashioned non-orbital helicopters. I let go. The targeting systems of the suit helped guide my trained hand, causing the weapon smash dead on into my target. Lightning exploded from the weapon's head as it punched a hole straight through the armored carapace. The bug stopped mid-motion to look down at the warhammer embedded in its chest. Right before, my weapon sent bursts of electricity rippling through the tender insides of the bug's body. I watched Billy flinch away instinctively as the smoking, charred bug toppled onto his prone body as I ran toward him. Meanwhile, Annabelle happily reported that I'd gotten 3 more kills for the damned leaderboards, in addition to 3,000 coins, as well as a multi-kill bonus of 1,000 coins. It'd all be worth shit to me, though, if Billy died. "Take the energy from that one," I shouted through my mask as I still wasn't able to communicate via the comm system thanks to all the interference. "I'll get us to the others if I can. In the meantime, tell your suit to give you 2 staples to bind your wounds and enough pain meds to make sure you can still walk." Thank God the Alliance didn't charge for medical supplies. It was one thing they loaded up our suits with, even the grass feds. After all, couldn't get their suits back if you couldn't make it back yourself. I swallowed hard, hoping that'd be enough to save them until we got off this rock. At the very least, it'd buy us enough time to get out of the center of this damned cloud. We're not out of the woods yet, so you better be ready to fight like your goddamn life depends on it.
7.
We need to move, I said, looking down at Billy's heat signature. I had already sucked the energy from 2 of my conquests and was ready to haul iron and get to our destination. I must have been more efficient than my grass-fed companion because the son of my one-time best friend was still struggling to pull the energy from the 3rd and final bug carcass. I would have taken it myself. Hell, I'd have done more with it than Billy could have done with 10 times the amount. We both knew it. But I was sure that much of his energy had been depleted by his suit's defensive shields, especially with the added drain of the nanite and chlorine cloud. Either that, or he'd likely burned it in a spray-and-pray attack with whatever weapons he might have had in his suit. At least that's what happens 9 times out of 10 when grass-feds are faced with something they hadn't seen coming. It was like these kids needed a map laying out every possible twist of fate right in front of them. Then again, that was what the VR training was for, so it probably wouldn't have mattered much anyway. "Palm flat on the carcass," I barked, looking at him fumble around the thing. "I'm trying," he answered. His voice was hoarse and still panicked. He couldn't see in front of him, so he probably had no idea if there were more bugs on the way. He should have known that if there were more, I'd already been dragging him behind me like a little girl's doll. But, like I said, common sense and grass-feds weren't exactly known to coexist much. "Clear your damn mind, Langham," I said, thinking about leaning down and smacking some sense into the boy's skull. "It's reflexive. The damn suit wants you to do it. You don't even have to think about it if..."
PFC Langham's elevated heart rate is stopping his suit from activating the energy retrieving system, Annabelle said in my head. That, combined with the nature of his injuries, could prove too much for his body in this state.
I cursed under my breath. The suit grounded itself onto our bodies, and to pull energy from the bugs, it had to interact with our bodies. If Billy couldn't calm himself down enough to think straight, I was gonna have to take it myself after all. "Just stand the hell up." I leaned down and pressed my gloved palm to the bug carcass. As the energy flowed into my suit, I sighed. I had hoped I could convince Billy to use the energy he'd have gotten from this bug on thermal vision, but it looked like I was going to have to drag his ass through this cloud anyway.
"Opie,"
Billy asked, choking on what had to be his own spit, given the fact that his mask filtered out the chlorine and nanite-infected dust. "Conroy's gone," I answered matter-of-factly. "Shredded. We need to move."
"Oh, God," Billy said.
And in his voice, I heard so much of his father. It would have shaken me in any other situation. A sound that pulled my mind back to one of the worst days of my life. If I didn't want to die today, to be another one of those, though, I was going to have to keep my will strong. And so was Billy. "No," I said firmly, grabbing him and jerking him upright. "We don't react like that, Billy. Especially not in the field. We're soldiers, damn it. We face this kind of stuff all the time. Conroy knew the risks, just like you do." I pulled him forward. "We keep moving."
"You don't even pray?"
he asked as I dragged him across the alien terrain. "Say whatever you want to say to whoever you want to say it to," I answered without breaking stride. "Just walk and talk at the same time." Maybe the elapsed time had done much to wash Billy's father of whatever faults he had. But the memories I had of the man weren't of someone like this. Someone who would fall apart at the first setback. I shook my head, a tinge of guilt pricking inside of me. What kind of bastard was I anyway? This kid was scared. It was his first mission. His first time on any of the bug worlds, let alone an unexplored one that we obviously knew nothing about. Our information was wrong. Probably lies fed to us by the Akbarian Empire. They needed a win, you see. They had strongholds, and they were growing substantially. But it was taking time. Undoubtedly, it was taking much longer than they thought it should.
The Alliance had come across an Akbarian transmission a year or so back. Translators said it was the Bug Queen reaming out one of her sergeants, though they had a different, almost unpronounceable word for it. She was pissed off about the lack of forward momentum, and she wanted results. While anyone with a working brain would have probably taken this as a threat, the Alliance spun it in a different direction. It was a victory. They played it all over the news programs and even put excerpts of it, translated into the languages of the Earth people who were going to be hearing it, of course, on billboards and bus stop benches. It was proof that we were winning, that Earth-grown David really might beat the space-dwelling Goliath. If you ask me, he was a crock of shit. First of all, I had my doubts about the translation. While I wouldn't know the Akbarian word for taco without Annabelle to translate it, something about the wordage made me think that maybe the Alliance-funded translators were laying it on a little thick when it came to the concern and downright fear the Queen of the Cockroaches seemed to have for us. Secondly, even if they were telling the truth, even if her bug-eyed majesty really was shitting her non-existent bug pants over the thought that we might win this thing, the last thing you'd ever want to do is let people know about it. I mean, I get it. They wanted to boost Earth morale. But Earth was our talent pool. Earth was where our Marines came from. And telling future Marines that we were winning a war we still hadn't seen the top of was as stupid as it was immoral. You don't tell kids they're going to the pool and then toss them into the Mississippi. It leads to trouble. And a lot of dead bodies to fish out. Take Langham, for example. It was that reason, along with so many others, I had to be hard on Bill's kid. Even if Bill hadn't exactly been the macho man my memories might suggest, his son was going to have to be if he was going to do better than his old man. People who fell apart, sooner or later, got ripped apart. That was how it worked. I wasn't going to let that happen to Billy. "Where are we going?" Billy asked. "I can't see anything." "Best to keep your eyes closed then," I said. "Save them for when you need them. And I'm getting us out of this damn cloud." I, of course, didn't add the "if I can" that was ringing around in my head like a tin can. "Annabelle, initiate spiral scanning. Tell me how much further I need to go in any direction to get the hell out of this thing." "Initiating spiral scanning," her voice repeated, her tone silky like honey. It was strange. We were going through hell, and we definitely sounded like it. Meanwhile, Annabelle was programmed to keep her composure up to and during the possibility of her dismantling. It was just another reason the suits were better than us. When we freaked out, they didn't. "Take a hard left here, Lieutenant Ryder. Follow that line 35 yards, and you'll be outside of the brunt of the nanite cloud." I did as she said, and, like a miracle in front of me, her words came true. The cloud dissipated. The moon stretched out in front of me in an expanse of various reds and golds, the world tinted from my still-accessed thermal vision. "Revert to basic vision tendencies," I said. My thermal vision overlay receded, revealing a large desert world with caves and caverns along various mountains of red, dry-looking rock. I didn't see any more bugs offhand, but I was intent on keeping my eyes peeled. There was no need to get snuck up on again. "Initiating biochemical and foreign body purge," Annabelle said, and a soft hum started in my suit. It was expelling the chlorine and nanites, which meant that when it was done, I'd actually be able to talk to the Alliance and the other teams here for a change. "Estimated time of completion, 37.6 seconds. "Good," I muttered, shrugging Billy off me. "Thank God," he said, and took a deep breath as though his suit hadn't been filtering out the chemicals this whole damn time. He looked over at me. "Thank you." "Don't do that either. Don't thank me for doing my job." I shook my head. "Because trust me, when the time comes, I won't be thanking you for it. I'll expect you to do it anyway, though." "Yes, sir," he said, nodding. "I mean, okay, Mark."
Relief filled me. The other one might have been dead, but Billy was okay, and so was I. That counted for something, even if we weren't even close to finish with this mission.
How are you? I asked, looking him over.
A little sore, but I think I'm fine.
That's cute, but I wasn't asking you for your damn interests in horoscope. Run a diagnostic check and tell me if you can still fight.
Okay, he said, blinking.
Again, I was being a dick, but it was for his own good. Better he hardened up now. It would save him a lot of trouble if he lived.
I'm okay, he answered. Broken rib and a bruised eye socket, but he says I can keep going.
Okay, I answered, feeling a pang of sympathy I couldn't afford to nurture.
Let's just try to get... Lieutenant Ryder,
Della's voice chimed through my comm system. Annabelle must have finished the purge and restored communication, a hypothesis reinforced by the sudden digital sound effect of coins falling as my kills were updated to the Alliance database.
I'm here, I answered over the pointless din.
What's your status? Della asked.
Lost one, kept the other. Billy Langham is still alive, I reported.
No thanks to you guys.
This was a damn trap, Della.
You mean to tell me you people couldn't see it coming? Isn't that what they pay you for? We don't have time for your lip right now. Only one other triad managed to survive the landing. Your band is being updated with their coordinates, and a navigational throughline is being downloaded to your suits as we speak. Get to the Artemis squad, Ryder, and do it quickly. Those girls are in trouble.
8. I had never been the kind of person who took the term legend very seriously. It's kind of hard to do when the word encompasses you, too. In the past, more people than I could count had used that word to describe me. They had walked up to me, hands ringing and jaw clenched tight with nerves, telling me how much the stories of what I had done meant to them growing up. They would tell me how their mothers would tuck them into bed at night, recounting all the amazing things I had done and how fearless I had been in the face of the bugs. My reactions would vary. While I had never been the kind of person to get a big head about crap I had no control over, I used to be more gracious when it came to admirers. I would nod and tell them how humbled I was to have been part of their routine. I would thank them for coming up, too, and if they were fellow Marines, I would suggest we go out for coffee in some phantom future that would never actually happen. All that faded away over the years, though. The truth is, when you stand there and watch the shit hit the fan time after time, the last thing you want to do is listen to some punk kid with no idea of how the world really works tell you how awesome the fan is. The fan is not awesome. The fan is covered in shit, and so was I. I wasn't fearless. Only fools are fearless. And half the stories those idiots' mothers told them were either embellished or completely made up. Anybody can be a hero when you're pulling it out of your ass. The truth was, I wasn't better than anyone else. I wasn't smarter or stronger. The secret to my success came down to two simple and undeniable facts. I was luckier than most, and I was a hell of a lot more cautious than most. I couldn't teach the first one. Luck is an intangible thing that can neither be bought nor properly defined. I was whatever I needed to be whenever I needed it. That was as close as I could come. The second part, though, the really important part, you could teach that. And I was under the impression that the Alliance should.
Prepare for the worst, and 9 times out of 10, you won't be wrong. Carver James told me that brilliant son of a bitch. And it was the greatest lesson I ever had the privilege of learning. Every step was a landmine. Every corner was one that the enemy was hiding behind. Every bug was the one that was finally going to kill you. Live like that, and you're never surprised. Train like that, and the world can't sneak up on you. If that was what made me a legend, I had a very specific man to thank for it.
and I assumed that the woman whose name came across my band right now felt very much the same way.
Mina John? Billy muttered. I could practically hear him popping wood.
Don't go fanboy on me, Langham. We've got work to do, and that doesn't involve you drooling at the mouth or spraying your pants at the thought of your childhood crush.
He looked at me, straightening himself up and clearing his throat.
Yes, Mark,
he said in a tone that was meant to make him sound like a man, but just served to further prove how far he had left to go down that particular road. I held back a smile, not because I was happy about anything, per se, but because, whether I cared to admit it or not, I understood what made the kid so impressed.
Everyone who has heard my name has probably also heard the name Mina John. If I was a legend in my own time, then she was as well. Sure, she hadn't braved as many missions as me, and she didn't have as many wins. That was verifiable fact with those stupid leaderboards the Alliance pushed out constantly. She was damn close, though. Closer than anyone else in the Marines. A woman after my own heart. She had also foregone the traditional route of moving up into management, remaining a lieutenant like myself. I wondered if, like me, she faced pressure to move on too. While the both of us were legends, the sort of stuff movies are made of and books were written about, to say we were particularly wanted out here was an overstatement. Well, that wasn't necessarily true. The Marines, 90% of whom were younger than us, adored the idea of having us out here, still in the field. I'd even heard tales of raffles being held with the intent of giving away a spot on my squad. That wouldn't work, of course. While the Alliance was definitely money-hungry, selling squads in the way they were made up flew directly in the face of the Constitution. The Alliance might have had brass balls, but they weren't big enough to do that. One whiff of that sort of impropriety would send the protesters into a frenzy the likes of which couldn't be ignored. Besides, the higher-ups squarely didn't like the idea of us being here. We were old, not old for the world or anything. At 34, I was in the prime of my life, and Mina looked to be even younger than me. We were definitely seasoned, though, having outlasted all the people we'd come up with. That made us dinosaurs, and it also made us tricky to deal with. We were heroes, and more than that, we were stories. But stories had endings, and the Alliance wanted control of those endings. The people of Earth loved me. They loved Mina, too. They looked up to both of us, and that meant they didn't want to see us die the kind of horrible death we almost certainly would should we continue on this path. Soldiers died. But heroes didn't have to. The news of us getting killed by the bugs would undoubtedly deal a horrible blow to Earth morale. To that end, I have been offered many promotions, many cushy jobs, and a lot of money to perform them. I had to imagine Mina had received the same options. I turned all of them down. I had to imagine she had as well. While I had never spoken to her or even seen her outside of the recruitment posters her image graces back on Earth, part of me thought I must have understood her in a way a lot of people didn't. We'd had similar experiences, she and I. We were both big deals who probably couldn't pay the rent if not for odd jobs and the like. I had to imagine she had gotten trapped in the same credit loop as I did when the Alliance changed the system. I also had to think she wasn't afraid of spending a little bit of coin to keep herself safe. I had seen the posters more than once, and while a hell of a lot of the Marines in my barracks were looking at her suit and imagining what was underneath it, I was staring at the obvious upgrades. Photon blasters, world-class shielding, and a battle axe that would have made Genghis Khan shudder with jealousy. That suit was a thing of beauty. Then again, so is she. You think Artemis Squad is all women?
I asked, walking beside Billy and cutting him off.
Of course it's all women. Didn't you hear the Major? She said those girls are in trouble.
Even if she hadn't, though. It was common knowledge Mina John only worked with women. Normally, that wouldn't be tenable. For the most part, the Alliance doesn't give two shits about who you want to team with, or what you feel like your personal limitations are when it comes to teammates. You get who you get, and if you're smart, you'll shut the hell up about it. Mina was a special case, though. Her status and record were enough to afford her some slack. It was unofficial, of course, but the Alliance must have felt like she'd earned it. I could have gotten the same thing, too, I guess. I didn't care, though. Men or women, I'd work with them all. As Della had said, the navigational through line which would lead us to Mina and the women of Artemis downloaded into our suits quickly. I watched as it splayed out of my vision, pumped into my head by the tubing sticking into my brainstem. There we go, I said. You see it? I see it, Billy said, wonderment in his voice. He must have been more than a little taken aback because he reached out with his hands as though he could actually touch the glowing red line that had appeared in our lines of sight. It wasn't really there, just an illusion produced by electrical impulses in his cerebral cortex, but it would stay there until we reached our destination. I shook my head. Where do they get these grass feds anyway? Annabelle, patch me into Artemis. I want to tell them help is on the way.
One moment, Lieutenant Ryder, she answered.
She was silent for a second or two before continuing.
I'm afraid attempts to contact have gone unanswered.
Damn, we must be too busy to answer. In a place like this, that wasn't good. Fine, give me an ETA.
Given the current climate and natural conditions, your estimated time of arrival, barring attack by Akburian or other unforeseen threats, is 436 seconds.
A little over 7 minutes, I muttered, nudging Billy. Let's go. That's more time than I'm comfortable with.
You think they'll be okay? He asked.
Maybe, I admitted. We'll just have to move fast and smart. Let's hope we don't run into much trouble out here. And let's hope Mina John is as impressive as the stories say she is. I hope she was. Hell, I even thought she might be. But as I moved forward along the holographic red line, all I could think of was a shit-covered fan. 9. I followed the red line displayed on my HUD with Billy walking behind me. Every so often I'd ask Annabelle to run periodic vicinity checks to ensure the bugs didn't sneak up on us, though she'd have done it anyway. Guess I'm just hard-headed that way. The moon was a desert filled with sand and stone, not unlike the deserts back home on Earth. The star that lit this moon, though, was further away than the sun was from Earth, and because of that, this place froze over at night. Scientists back home used to theorize that that was part of the reason why the bugs had developed such thick exoskeletons. Millennia of evolution had awarded them a natural way to brave the cold, harsh terrain of a planet that, like its moon, was far enough away from its heat source to prove perilous. That idea always struck me as strange and a little unfair. Plus, it made me look at my own species like a bunch of candy-ass spoiled brats. There we were, on a planet that made things relatively easy for us. Food was plentiful in most parts of it, and the temperatures were only ever a problem for people who were stupid enough to try to climb mountains or skydive near volcanoes. I chuckled to myself, relishing in the irony of a man who had literally chosen to blast off into the great beyond to fight space bugs, calling other people stupid. Guess we were all dumb in our own ways. Still, it was sort of a trip. The same planet that nurtured us, that made us strong as a species, also made us weak when our soft, fragile bodies were stacked against a grizzled, hardened Akburian Empire. Annabelle? I asked expectantly.
The area is secure and free of threat for 200 kilometers in every direction, she replied.
I hated the fact that the Alliance used kilometers as their standard unit of measurement. Though I'd learned about it in school, it never stuck until I was taught about measurement here. Until I was told point blank how knowing this stuff would help save my life. There was always something about a direct threat that got my brain juices flowing. Still, I would have rather them use something more American, which was probably the most American reaction I could have had to it. The Alliance decided to use a more universal numerical set, though. Something the most people would be comfortable with. The rest of us would just have to learn. And the sky? I asked.
The sky is clear as well, she replied.
her voice a soothing balm to my mind. "The sky?" Billy butted in, looking over at me with more than a little terror in his eyes. "Flyers? Do you think there are flyers even on the moon?"
I used to hear stories when I was a kid about the way the world used to be before everything went to hell. While our spinning ocean blue rock had its problems, none of them were ever of the size, scope, and downright brick-shitting scariness of what we faced when the bugs came. In fact, the world was such a safe place that a lot of people had to make up things to be scared of. Mythical creatures, vampires, witches, mummies, all that crap. People used to tell each other stories of monsters under beds and in closets. The funny thing was, when the monsters actually came, people stopped telling stories. Being scared became an everyday part of life, as expected as Sunday dinner, and as inescapable as the need for oxygen, which my suit was manufacturing from the ambient gases in the air right now. The stories people heard now didn't come in front of campfires and weren't whispered during sleepovers. They were told on the news. Chilling events recounted by men and women of stature, and accompanied by video evidence that shook even the bravest to their core. Even now, you won't find a man, woman, or child the whole wide world who hasn't seen those first images. The first photographic evidence of the Akbarian threat as it spread through our world faster than even that of a new celebrity baby, which I hear was a very popular type of photo at the time for some reason. It was a picture of a huge bug, marching through the streets, its gilded arms rending bodies with each slash while confused and terrified onlookers stood, unable to move, to think, to even attempt to deal with what was coming for them. It changed the world. Those bugs, groundlings as they would come to be known, were a menace, but they seemed, on their face anyway, to be containable. We could deal with them. It would be hard, and we would have to band together, but we could do it. Then came the flyers. The first photo of a winged bug, swooping out of the sky and plucking Army General Thomas Madden right out of his boots, was the first nail in the coffin for our shared world optimism. We were all taught the story as children. The way the blind faith instilled in us by our leaders at the time soured when we saw flyers descend on our home like a swarm of locusts. Monsters that walked were one thing. Monsters that flew and looked and felt like divine wrath raining down from heaven. And how do you beat the divine? As a result, it became the thing that really struck fear into the hearts of children. I used to be scared to death of them myself when I was a kid. The idea that they could come out of nowhere and just pluck you off the ground and eat you while there was nothing you could do? That kept me awake at night for years. How even now I was terrified of them. Though to be fair, I'd have to have been the stupidest person in the Corps not to be scared of the flying bastards now. I couldn't let that fear pull him down, though. I had busted my ass to keep him alive so far, and I wasn't going to let the yellow streak forming from his back make all that hard work worthless now. "What the hell did you think was going to happen?" I asked, my tone harsher than it needed to be. If I was mad, he would either get mad himself or get strong. Either one was better than being scared, better than being dead. "You joined the damn Marines, didn't you?" His eyes grew wide at my tone. "You read the words, you spoke the vows." I shook my head. "Don't stand there and tell me you're scared now." No, he answered, shaking his head. "Good." The kid went for strong instead of angry. That spoke well to his resolve. "I was just surprised. I was told flyers were scarce now. I didn't think they'd post them on a sleepy moon outpost." "Sleepy?" I scoffed. "This sleepy moon outpost isn't as sleepy as you thought it was. This place was a trap, Billy. A goddamn planet-sized trap. They wanted to lure us here and kill us dead, probably to make an example of us. I wouldn't be surprised if they pulled out all the stops, flyers among them." I looked at the boy. "And don't believe everything you hear from the news or the recruitment office. Both of them were just trying to get you to sign up.
telling you that the big bad monster you've spent your whole life hoping wouldn't come flying toward you from the sky is almost dead is a pretty good tactic, wouldn't you say?
I guess, he answered somberly. As he blinked,